E1.
Number 1B.
Then, from that point on, we began to see that this structural consciousness, through the four dimensions of consciousness, were really then seen as a, this is the further development, as a cybernetic consciousness, meaning that within the science of being, you have the eternal self-organization of being. And we began to see structural consciousness not as something static, but as something which is dynamic in itself, but still, in its dynamic sense, maintaining the stability of being. So that we had change within stability. And finally, somehow we touched the overall sense of the whole picture, which we called the comprehensive consciousness, that comprehensive consciousness which takes the whole now no more as the whole, but which takes the whole as constituted of a structural, dimensional, cybernetic whole, which is completely different than just the mystical sense of wholeness and oneness of being. So this has given us that terrific development, which I want to recapitulate quickly, that we began first with the atomistic spiritual consciousness, it's all spiritual, with the atomistic, then second with the linear, then third with the functional, then fourth with the operational, then fifth came the great break, the structural, sixth, the dimensional, seventh, the cybernetic, and eighth, the comprehensive spiritual consciousness. This is the way we were coming, and the development which we have gone through in a very natural way, each step leading to the next step without trying to force anything, but it just impelled itself constantly on our consciousness. So that today, this week, I want to stress especially that development that has started with the structural sense, which then included afterwards the dimensional, than the cybernetic and the comprehensive sense. So that the first four and the last four are two groups of really spiritual consciousness which can be distinguished quite clearly, because the first group had more to do with a understanding of the individual ideas, whereas the structural consciousness, which we want to investigate this week, has to do much more with the relationship which exists between these ideas. So this is the crucial point of development which I see, and which is quite unique to what we are doing, that we make that enormous step from the atomistic to the structural consciousness. You could also call it that great step from the metaphysical approach to the standpoint of science itself. Now, having summarized this, I want to point out again something very distinctly, namely that the whole groundwork of all what we do is a thorough understanding of the seven synonymous terms. Without that understanding of the seven synonymous term, my teaching just doesn't make sense. It's just Greek or Chinese or whatever you want to call it. It's just not understandable. It is just as if we would go and try to calculate and we don't know the numbers. We cannot calculate if we don't know the numbers and if we don't know the rules or the calculus of how these numbers are combined. So fundamental to this teaching is always that a student tries to get a better and better and better understanding of the seven synonymous terms. And there is no point where we can say, now I know them. That's not possible. It's a continuous study, a continuous culture, a continuous development. And as I have touched on that point, I want just to review briefly, historically, where we are. You know that we were investigating for the first time in a scientific way, with scientific methods, the textbook in regard to the seven synonymous terms before the war, the Second World War. And we investigated it to the point where we arrived at a certain definite conclusion of what these synonymous terms mean per se. That is, that we could, through the ideas characterizing each synonymous term, more or less define the nature of these seven synonymous terms. And then when we had that, then in the 40s we began to see that we can blend them and we got to the functional sense. But one thing always bothered me in that study, in which I took a very active part and a very time-consuming part, something always bothered me for which I never could get an answer over years and years and years. Namely, that by analyzing these synonymous terms, like you have it in the compendiums, you find, say, for mind, perhaps 100 characteristics that would characterize the synonymous term mind in distinction to the synonymous term spirit or soul or principle, life, truth and love. So we would get the whole list of such characteristics. And that which bothered me was that I felt that these ideas had no connection with each other in a systematic sense. I could see very easily that those characteristics would form one big definite tone of mind, say. Or that the characteristics of spirit which we found would constitute a tone, so to say, of what spirit really means. And that that tone would be very, very distinctly different than that of mind, and so of spirit and soul and principle. But what bothered me was that I felt that those many dozens and dozens of characteristics of one synonymous terms should have a very definite scientific relationship within themselves. And I never found an answer until rather late, namely round about 2 years ago. Only then, when my thought was prepared first over another 10 years before, since 1960 roundabout, in seeing the importance of having a structured sense of consciousness. To see that it is not enough to say that we must have a spiritual consciousness and to show us the atomistic sense of that spiritual consciousness, but that that consciousness must be very definitely and finely structured. And that through structuring spiritual consciousness, every one of these characteristics of one synonymous term would find its proper place value within the synonymous term. In other words, what we started around about 2 or 3 years ago was that we asked ourselves, what are the place values of the synonymous terms when viewed within the structure of the whole being, namely within the chart? There we began to see that each synonymous term has different place values within the whole of being, according to the place in which category we were thinking in a certain situation, and that according to the problem stated, each synonymous term would have a different place value. And you know how last year, when we were together, we really began to structure and structure and structure those synonymous terms. It was, when I look back, it was quite a challenging seminar. I think if you look back, it wasn't a seminar where you felt I'm on cloud nine constantly, but it was a seminar where thought and scientific thinking was challenged over and over and over until you began to see the delicacy of being, how delicate every synonymous term could be viewed when we ask the right questions, and questions were categories. If we could categorize and categorize and subcategorize being according to the problematics which we were considering. So, in a way, I want to thank you, I must say, for having had the courage to stand through that week and not to be disappointed and to feel too much challenged. I think in that week we did something which was a waymark in the development of the spiritual idea, which will be historical. And you could somehow be a witness of that terrific breakthrough that we did undertake last summer. So, in one way, I would like you to know that work was not in vain, that from that time on, all the seminars that I gave in the United States, in Switzerland, in Germany, in England, they all were geared to this clearer understanding of a spiritually structured consciousness. And this is something so completely different from the usual spiritual way of thinking, just in terms of isolated facts, isolated truth, that it will make a whole difference for the further development of this idea, especially if we will see it in conjunction with what is going on in the world, and not just what is going on within the narrow field of Christian Science. If you remember well, you can remember that we put a lot of weight or stress on scientific method of investigation and on scientific methodology of thinking in spiritual things. And what we did by it was really perhaps something which you didn't realize in its magnitude, namely that we made a great step away from using old symbols and beginning to use more and more the scientific symbols of our age. Each age has its symbols and must speak through the symbol of their age in order to be understood. Jesus had to speak through the symbolism of his age. And that age was an age where people could only understand something if one was symbolizing through experiences that had to do with nature, because they knew nature, symbolizing it through political happenings, because they were in the midst of wars and strategies and so on. Jesus used parables that could be understood by everyone of that age. He couldn't use scientific methods because nobody would have understood him. His audience was not trained in scientific symbols, not even in scientific logic. But today we are not at the time of Jesus, where we have to talk through the symbols of nature and of the mustard seed and of the prodigal son and these things. Today we are in an age of science, and in an age where the various science make very great strides to get deeper and deeper insights into reality using completely different methods, completely different models of worldviews than only 20 or 30 years ago. And therefore, we are entitled to use today the symbols of science and of scientific investigation, of scientific methods, in order to approach the textbook and in order to approach the science of being. This brings me really to my main concern of this week, namely, as I have said, to investigate what constitutes a structured spiritual consciousness in place of a atomistic spiritual consciousness, actually in place of all the mystical sense of spiritual consciousness. And to introduce this, I would like to recapitulate to you a book that has nothing to do with Christian Science, and therefore a book which is of highest esteem and respect in the field of exact sciences, and written by a man who at the MIT called Thomas Kuhn, and the title is The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. It's a book that is quoted here in America quite often, also over in Europe, as a great turning point and giving a answer to many, many scientific questions of greatest importance. Now, in doing that, I'm well aware that I am now treading on a field that is purely scientific, of pure theoretical science, and I will use it, so to say, as a symbol or as an illustration in order that we can find afterwards a true relationship with a terminology that we will use here so that we understand each other afterwards. I give you this review of this book, which I really implore you not to read, because it's a very difficult book, a book that needs quite a good insight into physics and so on, but which I want to summarize, and in summarizing it, we find a few new terms which we can use afterwards during the whole week and which will help us enormously to understand what we do in the science of being. So this will be the next step, what we are going to do.